στο όνομα του Πατρός και του Υιού και του Αγίου Πνεύματος. Αμήν. Βασιλεύ ουράνιε, παράκλητο πνεύμα της αληθείας σου, πανταγού παρών και τα πάντα πληρών, ο θησαυρός των αγαθών και ζωής χορηγός, ελθέ και σκήνωσον ημί και καθάρισον ημάς από πάσης κυλίδος και σώσον αγαθέτας ψυχάς ημών. Αμήν. Κάτσετε παιδιά, καθίστε. Απόψε, όπως ξέρετε, στη σειρά των ομιλιών είναι ομιλητής ο αγαπητός Θεόδωρος Θεοδόρου και το θέμα που θα μας απασχολήσει είναι πάρα πολύ ενδιαφέρον. Είναι ένα θέμα που καθημερινά το ζούμε εδώ στην Αυστραλία και όπου αλλού υπάρχουν Έλληνες έξω από την Ελλάδα. Διότι βέβαια το θέμα δεν υπάρχει μέσα στην Ελλάδα. Εκεί τα πράγματα είναι διαφορετικά. Οι σχέσεις της Εκκλησίας είναι διαφορετικοί με την πολιτεία, με το κράτος και υπάρχουν νόμοι στο κράτος που διέπουν, που αφορούν την Εκκλησία. Και όπως και η Εκκλησία φυσικά στη σχέση της με το κράτος είναι πάντοτε, δεν επεμβαίνει, δεν ανακατώνεται στα πράγματα του κράτους, αλλά το κράτος πολλές φορές την προστατεύει και φυσικά ωφελείται από τη σχέση αυτή που έχει το κράτος με την πολιτεία. Εδώ βέβαια, έξω από την Ελλάδα και εδώ στην Αυστραλία, στην Αμερική, στην Ευρώπη και παντού σε όλον τον κόσμο, οι θέσεις είναι τελείως διαφορετικοί. Ζούμε οι περισσότεροι σε χώρες, είτε θα είναι ανεξίθρικες χώρες που δεν έχουν καμία πίστη επίσημη. Στην Ελλάδα βέβαια είναι η Ορθόδοξη Εκκλησία, η επίσημη Εκκλησία. Και εδώ βέβαια δεν έχουμε τέτοιο νόμο. Υπάρχουν ίσως μερικοί νόμοι που προστατεύουν μερικές από τις εκκλησίες που έχουν έρθει από τις πρώτες εδώ, όπως είναι η Ρωμαιοκαθολική και η Αγγλικανική Εκκλησία και ίσως και η Προτεσταντική. Αλλά εμείς που ήρθαμε πολύ αργότερα, για μας δεν υπάρχει νόμος να μας προστατεύει. Γι' αυτό ακριβώς και έχουμε πολλά πολλά προβλήματα και προσπαθούμε πάντοτε τα προβλήματά μας να τα λύσουμε μόνοι μας. Και βέβαια έχει δημιουργηθεί ένα, θα λέγαμε, μια κατάσταση η οποία χωρίζει κατά κάποιον τρόπο τις κοινότητες από τις εκκλησίες, τις κοινότητες από τις ενορίες. Όταν λέμε κοινότητα, στην Ελλάδα εννοούμε άλλο πράγμα από ότι η εκκλησία. Η εκκλησία είναι οι ενορίες στην Ελλάδα. Και οι κοινότητες είναι πολιτική η σημασία της λέξεως. Πάνε στην κοινότητα γιατί καταγράφονται εκεί τα περιουσιακά στοιχεία, τα μητρώα, πότε γεννιέται ένα παιδί, πότε βαπτίζεται ένα παιδί κτλ. Και έχει άλλα καθήκοντα η κοινότητα, στα οποία βέβαια δεν ανακατώνεται η Εκκλησία. Η Εκκλησία έχει καθαρός το εκκλησιαστικό, το θρησκευτικό της μέρος. Εδώ βέβαια, όπως σας είπα, έχουμε πολλά προβλήματα, είχαμε πολλά περισσότερα στις αρχές, τώρα σιγά σιγά βεβαίως αρχίζουμε να καταλαβαίνουμε όλοι μας τη θέση της Εκκλησίας στην Αυστραλία και οπωσδήποτε έχουμε ξεπεράσει πολλά από αυτά τα προβλήματα. Δεν θέλω να αναφερθώ σε λεπτομέρειες γιατί αυτά θα τα πει ο αγαπητός Θόδωρος. Εκείνο που θα ήθελα από εσάς να προσέξετε την ομιλία, να καταλάβετε τι είναι κοινότητα και τι είναι ενορία. Όταν καταλάβετε αυτό το πράγμα, παιδιά, τότε δεν θα υπάρξουν προβλήματα, τουλάχιστον προσωπικά σας προβλήματα. Θα τα ξεπεράσετε. Και περιμένουμε όχι μόνο να τα ξεπεράσετε, αλλά να γίνετε και εκείνοι οι οποίοι θα φωτίσετε, θα διαφωτίσετε αυτούς οι οποίοι δεν ξέρουν, διότι πολλοί δεν ξέρουν. Δεν γνωρίζουν οι γονείς μας. Δεν γνωρίζουν πολλοί οι οποίοι δεν έχουν μεγάλη σχέση με την Εκκλησία. Και καμιά φορά λένε τι τρώγονται οι παπάδες, οι δεσποτάδες με τους λαϊκούς, τι τρώγονται οι πρόεδροι με τους λαϊκούς κτλ. Ακούγοντας λοιπόν την ομιλία απόψε, φαντάζομαι θα έχετε ξεκαθαρίσει μέσα στο μυαλό σας ορισμένα πράγματα που είναι απαραίτητα να τα γνωρίζουμε σαν χριστιανοί και να ξέρουμε τι ρόλο παίζει η Εκκλησία μας εδώ, σε αυτή τη χώρα που βρισκόμαστε. Παρακαλώ να ακούσετε τον Θόδωρο στην ομιλία. Ευχαριστώ πολύ.
Thank you, Grace. We've seen over the years many instances of conflict arising between, in particular, the hierarchy of the Greek Orthodox Church, Archbishop, Auxiliary Bishops, the priests, the lay people, and the leaders of the committees of these community churches throughout, unfortunately, most of Australia. This conflict invariably results in significant divisions amongst the faithful who choose sides in the conflict based on their personal beliefs and understandings of what constitutes a church community and how that community is to be organized and operated. From the Orthodox Church's perspective, the primary issue of contention is centered around the ownership of the church and the land which the church is situated. The Archdiocese insists that the land in question be written over for ownership by the property trust of the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of Australia. You will note that this form of ownership is not controlled or identified as being owned by any one individual. The church is therefore protected against her being used for any purpose other than for the celebration of the sacraments and for the gathering of the faithful to worship the triune God. This desire was ratified by the Fourth Clergy Lady Congress of 1981, which the decisions, of course, in turn are the subject of approval by the Ecumenical Patriarch. From the perspective of the committee's ownership of the church forms an integral part of the overall operations and activities of that community and therefore must remain under their control and ownership. To better understand how we have reached this point, we must look at the historical evolution of the community church within Australia. The early Greek Orthodox communities were created by the early Greek immigrants upon arriving in Australia and very quickly identifying a common need, the preservation of the Greek tradition and heritage, including the language, culture, and the Greek Orthodox faith. This initiative of lay persons was the result of Greek people drawing together by the common faith and traditions which they enjoyed in their mother countries, and by the difficulties of their new environment, their new circumstances that they found themselves in. Based on the laws of this land, constitutions were inaugurated and a process of signing members began. These members vote in and they vote out committees based on the applicable constitution. This system remains to this day. It is in fact the system of the laws of this land require constitutions for any such groups to be inaugurated and to be the centre of understanding of how that community is to operate. The concern which exists even to this day is that low membership numbers do not accurately reflect the interests of the community they represent. Consequently, committee members are able to easily be re-elected by the various faction groups which are formed. We have cases of community churches consisting of 300, 400, perhaps 500 members, when in fact the true representation of that community is something in the order of 5,000, 8,000 people. So we can see we don't have a true representation of the people in that community. Nevertheless, we have seen Greek Orthodox churches being established throughout Australia by these communities. To their credit, with the passage of time, they've achieved freehold ownership of the land and the church buildings with respect to the provision of priests required to service the needs of the community. The Greek faithful developed warm relations initially with the Patriarchate of Jerusalem, from where priests were provided until 1902. Between the years 1903 and 1907, the Patriarchate of Jerusalem gave her consent for the Holy Synod of Greece to take over the responsibility for the administration of the ecclesiastical arm of the Greek Orthodox communities. And from 1908, the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople has assumed this responsibility. An important change occurred on the 7th of March 1924, when according to ancient church law and her canonical right, the Ecumenical Patriarchate undertook a significant decision to establish the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of Australia and New Zealand, initially a metropolitan, later on an archdiocese. This aimed to better service the needs of the Greek Orthodox living in the diaspora of the fifth continent. To this day, the Ecumenical Patriarch continues to hold the organizational and spiritual responsibility, thereby appointing the Archbishop, in this case to Australia. More specifically, the Archbishop, and in essence the Episcopo, is canonically appointed by the Holy Synod of Bishops, that of the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople. The official Greek Orthodox Church of Australia services the needs of her faithful through the parishes she has established and by providing priests to the various community churches. In parallel, we have seen both the archdiocese and the community groups satisfy the social, cultural, educational, and spiritual needs which helped shape the Australian identity and to preserve that which those migrants brought with them to this country. Herein lies the beginning of the conflict that we've spoken about. In the majority of cases, the respective community groups see the archdiocese as a threat to all of their assets, not just the church, but to all of their assets, schools, halls, nursing homes, and of course the church that we've spoken about, thereby refusing to coexist with the archdiocese, let alone sign over ownership rights of the church. And yet, these same groups expect the archdiocese to serve their spiritual needs by having a priest provided to them. Given this perceived threat, how do these community groups see the priest and how do they relate to him? His Grace, priests, and as I have heard myself from community members, the priest is considered by these people as a mere employee of that community and therefore must fulfill the wishes of the board, the employer. In my opinion, this is my personal view, these committee members perceive the priest in this fashion in an endeavour to try to limit his authority and even whilst he is performing his spiritual duties. And we'll talk about some examples of this type of interference at the end of the discussion. This is why indeed we see regular interference by members of the committees who endeavour to have the priest perform his duties the way they want, thereby hindering the priest from performing his duties the way he sees he should perform them, under effectively instruction by the Archbishop of this country. If the Archbishop understands how these committees see the relationship between the priest and themselves, why does he continue to provide priests to these community churches? The answer is simple. His Eminence tolerates their behaviour, in many instances only up to a point, ultimately for the salvation of his flock. He's prepared to overlook their lack of obedience to ensure the canonical presence of his priest, thereby validating the mysteries of the church. In numerous instances, these community groups are willing to replace the archdiocese priest with a non-canonical so-called priest who has consciously no link through apostolic succession to the hands of our Lord and Saviour Jesus Christ. Clearly this shows a total lack of understanding of what it means to belong to the one holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. Let us now see the role of the priest and indeed that of the bishop within the context of our discussion. And I'd like to extract from a presentation that Father Elias Kendrotis has given, titled The Importance of the Priesthood in the Orthodox Church. He states the following about one of the least understood ministries. Bishop Kallistos in the Orthodox Church, Father says, writes, without him, the bishop, neither the church nor the name Christian could exist. He is the fountain of all sacraments through which we obtain salvation. If any are not with the bishop, they are not with the church. At his election, that is of the bishop, and the consideration and consideration, an Orthodox bishop is endowed with the threefold power of ruling, teaching, and celebrating the sacraments. The bishop is the fountain of all the sacraments. Even today, a priest, when he celebrates a liturgy or any service, he's really acting as the bishop's deputy. The bishop is a father to his flock. His authority is fundamentally the authority of the church. The church, says St. Cyprian, is the people united to the bishop, the flock clinging to its shepherd. The bishop is in the church, and the church is in the bishop. In Acts 20:28, St. Paul says, take heed to yourselves and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, the bishop, to shepherd the church of God. The position of bishop is so important to the church's life that we see the following quotes from the Apostolic Father St. Ignatius of Antioch, 107 AD, as being extremely pertinent. You must all follow the bishop as Jesus Christ followed the Father. Follow the presbyters as you would the apostles, reverence the deacons. Do not do anything concerning the church away from the bishop. Listen to the bishop, that God may listen to you too. Be zealous not to oppose the bishop in order to be subject to God. So, for the honor of God who created us, it is proper to obey the bishop. Without any hypocrisy, because one is not fooling the bishop who is visible, but trying to overreach the invisible God. When you submit to the bishop, you seem to me to be living, not the life of men, but that of Jesus Christ, who died for us. Children of the light of truth, avoid division and bad doctrines, heresies. Where the shepherd is, there you as sheep should follow. Follow the bishop as the disciples did the Lord, and the presbyter as if following the apostles. It is not permitted without the bishop's permission either to baptize or to hold an agape, but whatever he allows is pleasing to God. Whatever he allows is pleasing to God. Keeping in mind those three elements of his ordination. He who honors a bishop is honored by God. He who does anything without permission from the bishop is worshipping the devil. These are the words of Saint Ignatius. Therefore, and also about St. Ignatius, it's important to note that he is a very early church father, 107 AD. So we see here these points being established by him relatively within the same period of time when Christ had left us. Therefore, if we fully understand the above teachings of this early Christian father, how could we possibly see the priest as an employee and not as the father of the flock? St. Ignatius now turns his attention to comment on how the lay person is to relate to the canonical bishop. He says, If a man runs after a schismatic, he will not inherit the kingdom of God. If a man chooses to be a dissenter, he severs all connection with the passion. That's in his letter to the Philadelphians. Where there is a division and passion, there is no place for God. Now, the Lord forgives all if they change their mind and return to union with God and the council of the bishop. Let that celebration of the Eucharist, the Holy Communion, be considered valid, which is held under the bishop or anyone to whom he had committed it. Let us be careful not to oppose the bishop, that we may be submissive to God. One should look upon the bishop as upon the Lord himself. Show obedience with undivided mind to the bishop and to the presbytery, and to break the same bread. The bishop embodies the authority of God the Father. Be united with the bishop and those who preside. And yet, after all we have said, and by the way, these thoughts are not new, we lay people continue to display self-interest, pride, and arrogance, thereby resulting in this, I call it, absolute chaos that we find ourselves in. These issues that we have, as Grace pointed out earlier on, having been involved in the church now for 25 years, we seem to take a few steps forward and one step back. Things are improving, as Grace said, but you can imagine how far forward we would have been if the church and her lay people were united as one body. So, allow me to finish with the following quote from Peter's first epistle, chapter 5, verse 5, which sums up perfectly the layperson's responsibility in this matter. You younger people, submit yourselves to your elders, the bishop. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. The presence of humility would permit these people to hand over the church and land which the archbishop's flock has paid for in order to safeguard the church from being used for anything else but for the house of God. These outlines were very brief, but in very simple terms, what we've tried to identify here is why we as human beings tend to want to control things that really we should not control. Why is it that we want to do this? And, as we've pointed out, it is because of pride. We bring from the mother country a lot of prejudices, a lot of faction issues. We find a lot of authority and power in being, for example, the president of a particular committee or group. There cannot be two leaders when it comes to the administration of the spiritual elements within the church building. It's just not possible in the eyes of God. The bishop, in his implementation to serve his flock, does nothing more than to instruct the flock according to Christ's teachings through this apostolic succession. Without that link, there is no bishop. And we unfortunately have in this country a false bishop who was once upon a time canonical. He is now a heretic. He is in Adelaide, and we need to be careful, because over the years I've come across people who simply do not understand the difference. And the clergy, I'm sure, are frustrated more than a lay person would be, but it is frustrating when you know the truth, and because of pride or arrogance, we refuse to listen. What I'd like to do now is to give you some examples of some of the problems that have occurred over the years. Firstly, let me start off on a positive note by saying that there are some community churches that have worked in harmony with the Archdiocese. For example, San Spiridon in Adelaide operates a school now, as of a couple of years ago, I think. They have other social gatherings and groups, but they have signed over the property that the church sits on to the Archdiocese. San Spiridon in Sydney, I believe, is going through the process of doing the same thing. And it's interesting, where this has occurred, it's occurred for a number of reasons, maybe not in these particular cases, but in some other cases that I'll give you examples of, it's occurred because of dire financial constraints, sheer desperation. And there's one particular example that I'm going to talk about that really is a shame to the to us as a Greek community. Firstly, let me just give you an example of Archbishop Ezekiel. Back in the 60s, I'm not sure exactly when, His Grace would probably remember the dates. His Grace was actually there, I discovered tonight. Was locked out of the Annunciation of Our Lady in East Melbourne. Was locked out of the church. The locks were changed the night before, and the Archbishop could not enter the church to perform the service. So, on the steps of the church, His Eminence said a prayer and read a memorial service for a lady who had brought a plate of koliva. Father Synesios Fragos at St. Paraskevi, St. Albans, he was forced to use a payphone to return phone calls. Community church. Salaries have been cut because, in one particular case, a youth group was formed and the community saw the youth group as a threat to the language and to their ultimate authority, and so they cut his salary. They cut the priest's salary. Father Timothy Evangelinidis in Hobart this year was replaced by a non-canonical so-called priest, George Athanasiadis, from Adelaide, defrocked by the Mother Church, simply went to Adelaide and was welcomed by the non-canonical bishop. Sent to Hobart to replace the canonical priest. St. Constantine and Helen in South Yarra has now been handed over, signed over to the Archdiocese because in those days, financial constraints. This one for me, the one I'm about to say, is the piece de resistance of the problems. St. Basil's in Brunswick in 1992 went into receivership because the community had used the church as security for some other business ventures that they wanted to get involved in, a day school and some other things, and it failed. The bank repossessed the church, and as far as the bank is concerned, they wanted their money, and the interested party was the Turkish consulate. They wanted to purchase our church and convert it into the consulate. Into the consulate of Turkey. His Grace stepped in, went to the bank and insisted that they sell the church to the Archdiocese. Fortunately, the bank agreed for a reasonable amount, But unfortunately, we now found ourselves repaying a church that was already paid off. $750,000, if I'm not mistaken. $750,000, again, given over by the faithful, and to Father Athanasius's credit, in just over 10 years, if my memory serves me correct, it was paid off. Father Yakovos down at Oakley is having ongoing problems with the community. Clear interference during the services. He has spoken publicly about this, so I'll repeat it, where on Holy Thursday he was interfered with during the reading of the Gospels, the 12 Gospels, by the president, who wanted to lay a wreath at the foot of the cross. And Father would not permit it, and a conflict arose in the altar whilst Father, dressed in the vestments, representing Christ at that moment, was having challenges from the president. He has forced himself now to withdraw his services from the school. This is terrible, because of all the priests I've ever met, he has the best relationship that I've ever seen with children. And I witnessed the most amazing thing once when I'd heard about this. We're at a fundraising at Ipapadi. And he arrived late, so everybody was seated. And if you know the way Ipapadi is laid out, the hall at Ipapadi to Kirio, he walked inside. And right across from the other side of the hall, I think at the time His Grace was talking, this little girl just got out of her seat and bolted right across the room, right in front of, I think it was His Grace. One of the priests was talking, bolted right across the room and flew into his arms and gave him a hug. Now, you don't see that every day. We often hear from children that the priest is not approachable. Well, I think through His Grace, the priests these days are more approachable than ever. Certainly when I was a child, we dared not approach a priest on a personal level. It just was not done. So all of these things do one thing, and that is to delay the progress of the church. It causes our faithful to sin without them realizing it. It causes innocent lay people to come into conflict when they really don't understand why. It causes innocent people to be totally oblivious to what's going on and to listen to untruths about our church. And on many occasions, it's personalized. It's personalized through the media. It's personalized on an individual basis. During the liturgies, to have people yelling and screaming is just unacceptable. And to have these same people, as I've witnessed over the years, critical of the priests, of His Grace, of His Eminence, and then to approach them and kiss their hand and to want to receive Holy Communion from them, just doesn't make sense. Who do they think they're fooling, these people? The Archdiocese, on the other hand, has a structure, has an infrastructure, which is very strong. She runs nursing homes, day schools throughout the country. Of course, the churches, very, very successfully. And upon paying off a church, the church is then consecrated, and thereby sealing, both in the physical sense and in the spiritual sense, that building is no longer used for any other purpose than that for what we spoke about earlier, the performing of the sacraments and the worshipping of our God. And if you see the service of a consecration of a church, and if you haven't, Keep your ears open for when the next one might be happening, because it is a very moving experience. It's very symbolic, deliberately, so that there is no misunderstanding as to what's happening, and it truly is the house of God. Whilst community churches consider these buildings as assets, we run the risk of them being sold off, because the law of this country protects them and allows them to sell off a church building to whomever, to the highest bidder. And that highest bidder can use the church there then for whatever purpose they wish to use it for. But under the property trust of the Archdiocese, it cannot happen. It just cannot happen because of the way the property trust has been structured and the way it's been written up. It just simply is locked away in a legal sense and used for no other purpose. So, beloved brothers and sisters in Christ, this is the general summation of what I wanted to present to you, some examples of the problems that we have within our community. And I think we all have an obligation and a responsibility to disseminate as much information as possible accurately. If we are ignorant of the issues, we must learn. We must learn in order to defend the truth and to support our bishops. Aftar, thank you. Now we'll have some questions, unless Your Grace, me prefer to not be this is a okay, thanks.
Thank you very much for your speech. I want to ask the difference, like the community pays for the priest, is that right? The other people on the honorias, who pays their salary?
The honorias? No. They're paid by the church as well, by the parish.
The parish.
At local level.
Local level. So what, well, I mean, from any for example, money that's remaining from candles and stuff like that, you mean? Or?
Well, all the money that the church collects is distributed for the various expenses that the church has. For example, the salary of a priest is one of the expenses that the church has and is paid at that level. There is a percentage that's sent to the Archdiocese as well to help in the running of the administration of the Archdiocese.
So whether it's the community or the parish, it's still from one
kumbara, yes.
So to speak, isn't it? In a way.
Well,
it's not different. Like, it's not the Archdiocese paying the priest.
Well, in the case of the parish church, indirectly it's the Archdiocese, because the parish church belongs to the Archdiocese.
Right.
But on a functional level, the wages of the priest are paid off, I think it's weekly or fortnightly perhaps, direct debit perhaps into his account, from that local level. The money's not sent to the Archdiocese and then the Archdiocese pays each of the priests. No, it doesn't happen that way.
Because recently we had our community, I go to a community church, and I had the community speak to me because I had to have dealings with them whether I liked it or not. I was forced upon it because of the Sunday school books that we had to get. And they said to me, well, the previous priest had to do what we tell him, and the new priest has to do what we tell him, because we, the employers, he's the employee. We pay his salary. And I'm thinking, whoa, you know, it's all right. And then I thought, well, if he wasn't paid by them, then would he have more freedom?
Would have that authority. Unfortunately, in that sense, it would be nice if he was paid by the Archdiocese, because then in a secular sense, they would at least not be able to accuse him of being an employee of theirs.
Mm.
But they've reduced the priest to that level, and that's why they see him as an employee.
Yeah.
It's an employer-employee relationship. They've missed the essence of the role of the priest within that parish.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the priest, in terms of the salary that he gets, which, by the way, is very, very low. The priest's salary is very low. It's the community church, unfortunately, pays it reluctantly as well. And in many instances, we've had examples of the priest not being paid. Well, Father Synesius is one example of simply not being paid. Why? If you even reduce the priest to an employee, well, you've got to pay him, if you want to look at it that, in that sense. The man has to eat. He's got a family to feed in most cases. So this is the problem. But to answer your question specifically, the payments are made at the local level, at the church level.
We had a small, tiny, a problem, because now the community was trying to blame the priest about something that happened with Sunday school books. And the previous priest was saying, no, yeah, don't worry, and it's sort of hard, because then they're blaming now the old priest, didn't tell us, we would have paid for these books, So I'm thinking, I want to wash my hands sort of thing of it and sort of keep away as much as I can.
I don't envy people like yourself, because obviously people like yourself are in a very difficult situation. You have the faith, you're trying to, I think in your case, a Sunday school activities, and you are stifled by committee people thinking that what you're doing is either irrelevant, insignificant, too expensive, therefore we won't support you. And there are many instances where the community churches will say, no, we don't want a Sunday school, we don't want a youth group, you can't use the hall after hours. All these sorts of stories are very common, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Theo, just in case people have a misunderstanding, because it might sound like what's happening to Father Synesius is still happening in the current church. Yeah, I'll explain that.
Yeah, thank you, Father. Father Synesius, I can't remember the year, but I was with His Grace when when Father Synesius read out a letter that the Archdiocese was withdrawing her services. And it was an amazing experience, because His Grace was on the throne. He was holding a cross, full vestments, and the people, when they realized what the letter was saying, they started screaming and yelling and shouting. And I thought, oh, we're finished. So I was standing next to His Grace, and Bishop Seme, they were yelling and screaming, yes, but not one person took one step forward to touch His Grace or ourselves. It was as if, this is what I thought, it was as if they were being stopped by some force. And now, that was a Ye Paraskevi, the older Ye Paraskevi, which is now non-canonical. The Archdiocese has established a Ye Paraskevi, canonical, with Father Synesius there, under the control of the Archdiocese, the ownership of the Archdiocese. And he's doing a terrific job there.
Hi, Theo, good talk, by the way. Just wanted to ask, I've heard a rumor that there are metropolitans to be sent from overseas for the community churches. How much truth is in that?
To be sent to do what? To support them?
To guide them.
To become spiritual leaders for them?
I think so, yeah.
Then I haven't heard of it. This, I'd be very surprised. This can't happen, because for that to occur, these metropolitans would need the blessing of the Patriarchate of Constantinople. And that's not likely to happen, number one. Therefore, if they do enter this country under those circumstances, that is, without the blessing of the Patriarchate and, of course, His Eminence, you will find that they will be automatically non-canonical and have no support whatsoever from the Archdiocese here, and the Patriarchate will take steps to either remove them, because if they come to Australia, where are they coming from? Greece.
That's what I heard.
If they're coming from Greece, then there's no way the Church of Greece would send them here. It's just not possible.
Θα ήθελα να απαντήσω στην ερώτηση. Βέβαια, θα πρέπει να ξέρετε, παιδιά, ότι Στην Εκκλησία υπάρχει η αρχή ότι καμία δεν είναι σε θέση να επέμβει στα πράγματα της άλλης. What I mean with that? Here, the Archbishop of this church is Archbishop Stylianos, appointed by the Ecumenical Patriarchate. This archdiocese belongs to the Ecumenical Patriarchate. So the Church of Greece can't at all mix with this particular church. They have problems with the archdiocese. They have to resolve these problems with discussions with their own head of the church, which is Archbishop Stylianos. And so there is no fear that somebody can come from somewhere, not only from Greece, but also from the other canonical Greek churches or Orthodox general churches. No bishop from the Patriarchate of Russia can come here. No bishop from the Bulgaria, no bishop from Serbia. Of course, they come only for their own people, but not for the Greek Orthodox people. We are belonging to the Ecumenical Patriarchate. Our Ecumenical Patriarchate elected Archbishop Stylianos, and he's going to be here until the Patriarchate decides otherwise. So there is no fear at all. You see and you read in the newspapers here and there, but they are as of one of ancient writers says, "Epea pteroenda." You know what it means? Logia pterota. Logia. Tipota dilavi. That is what it is, all this that you hear from time to time. Ναι.
Θεοφιλέστατε, μιλήσατε για τον Πατριάρχη. Δεν θα μπορούσε ο Πατριάρχης, εφόσον είναι the Ecumenical Patriarchate, να στείλει, να πάρει μια απόφαση, να στείλει ένα γράμμα, όπως γίνεται μια σύνοδος, για παράδειγμα, και να πει ότι όλες αυτές οι ενορίες που δεν υπακούν οι εκκλησίες που δεν υπακούν στην Αρχιεπισκοπή και είναι σχισματικές, δεν θα πρέπει να λειτουργούν. Δεν θα μπορεί να γίνει κάτι τέτοιο.
Δεν μπορεί να το κάνει το Πατριαρχείο. Το έκανε όταν το Πατριαρχείο τους λέει εκείνη η κανονική εκκλησία. Εδώ δεν μπορεί να το κάνει. Δεν έχει λόγο, παιδιά. Δεν ισχύει ο λόγος του Πατριαρχείου. Πρώτα το Πατριαρχείο έχει τον αντιπρόσωπό της. Our Patriarchate has his representative here, who is Archbishop Stylianos.
Okay.
And so they don't mix, because we are a sort of independent. They don't. If they decide to come here, they are coming just a representative from the Ecumenical Patriarchate, as they coming from time to time to our clergy lady congress, to other youth congresses that we have and so on. But they can't. They decided when they say to the faithful, please obey to your canonical bishops, to your canonical archbishop, and to our canonical church. The others that they present themselves as bishops, as priests and so on, they are not canonical. This is the only way that can protect canonicity in a country which, of course, the law of the country doesn't protect the church.
What about the idea that some of our Greek Orthodox Christians, who ordinarily belong to the Orthodox Church, to the Greek Orthodox Church, are going to other churches and not coming to the Greek Orthodox Church?
Again, we can't stop anybody to go anywhere. We, of course, inform them concerning, as we inform the people right through the decades. Please don't go to the non-canonical to the priests, to defrocked priests and this and that. And we always mention that to the people. Be careful, because Canonicity means this and that, don't go there, don't have Holy Communion from them, don't perform sacraments there because they are not canonical, they are not valid, and so on. But some of them still they are going. We can't stop them, as we can't stop them going to other churches. Some of them, they go to so-called old calendar churches, and they are not also canonical, and they are so many, they are not only one, they are three, four, five frictions. It's something that belongs completely to our free will. We can't, δεν μπορούμε να περιορίσουμε τον άνθρωπο. Μόνον θα πρέπει να καταλάβει. When they understand what is the problem, then they protect themselves. Otherwise, we can't. We are not a junta, or we are not just a soldier to catch somebody or police and please come here. No, we have the door open. For those that are coming, we thank God and we bless them. For the others, we feel sorry, but we pray for them. That's the only thing that we can do.
I just wanted to ask, if someone's baptized in a community church and then they want to get married in a church part of the Archdiocese, can they still get married if they are not recognized as baptized as Greek Orthodox in the Church of the Archdiocese? Like, are they recognized as baptized?
If I understood the question correctly, if a person is baptized in a non-canonical church, are they then permitted to be married in a canonical church? Is that right? No. Because the church does not recognize that baptism. Because a non-canonical means that the person, the so-called priest, has no link with the mother church. That mother church has the link through apostolic succession back to the hands of Jesus Christ. That person who was so-called baptized by a defrocked priest, or a priest who happened to just buy the vestments and pretend he's a priest, that person has no spiritual link with the mystery and therefore cannot possibly be baptized.
So does that mean they need to be baptized again?
They need to, not baptized again, they need to be baptized. Because they weren't baptized. I know a case when I was helping Father Elias many years ago at the church. We locked the doors at a weeknight because the family was so embarrassed. They were married in a non-canonical church. They had their three children baptized in a non-canonical church. Innocently, ignorantly, whichever way you want to look at it, we married them and baptized their three kids all in the one night. Not we, Father did. I was assisting him. So, and this is what his grace was talking about, that we have two categories of persons, those who knowingly will be married or have their children baptized in these churches because they think, it's a church, he's a priest, he says the right words, he's got the right actions, that's enough. And then we have the other category of people who innocently go to these churches, so-called churches. It's not a church. When they realize the mistake, they run to our church and they are married or baptized. I'll tell you a story based on that question and the previous one. His Grace, a long time ago, received a phone call from a lady in Greece. And she was pleading over the phone because what had happened, she had been married years earlier in one of these false churches. Well, years later her husband dies and left her a lot of land in Greece. So she went over to Greece to claim what she believed would be hers. And the church over there said, look, I'm sorry, or the authorities over there said, look, I'm sorry, we don't recognize this marriage. You're not married. And so she rang the bishop and pleaded with him and said to him, And His Grace said, "Well, what do you want me to do? I can't marry you now. The man's dead. It's too late."
Yes, the family of her husband. No, they married actually in the Schismatic Church in Adelaide, and I was there, and so her husband killed in an accident, and then she with three children went over to Greece. And her father-in-law had a lot of properties there. And she wanted to get the part of this, whatever he had there, belonging to her husband. And when she went to the authorities, of course, they asked for their marriage certificate, her marriage certificate. And she presented this particular, this fault certificate, which she got from the Schismatic Church from Adelaide. And they said, "No, sorry, this is not canonical. You are not canonically married." And so then she said, "What am I going to do?" "Well, I don't know. You have to correct this matter." But her husband, of course, was dead. And then she, of course, gave me a ring saying, "What can I do?" I said to her, "Nothing. We can't help you. First of all, we can't give you just a certificate because we never married you in any of our churches. Second, your husband is dead. If your husband was alive, then things would be more easier. You could come to the church at night and we can marry you." And then, of course, the authorities in Greece, they told her to ask her father-in-law to adopt the children of his son, to give the name to the children. And also, the old man was dead, and she couldn't, actually the children couldn't get the name, the surname of their father, to get also what belonged to them. And so she lost whatever the rights, and of course the relatives, they got whatever the family had in Rhodes. So this is one example how difficult and also how important it is to do things in proper way, and we explain this to all our faithful, and they know now. I am 42 years here and continuously saying to the church, "Please, be careful of this and that and that and this and that." I think now nobody should say that they don't know. Everybody knows. They do sometimes, they follow their hearts, and so they could go anywhere in schismatics, in defrocked clergymen and so on. And these are the results. We shouldn't forget that in Greece it is very important to have your papers, canonical papers, the baptism certificate and the wedding certificate. If your parents, your grandparents, they have something there, and later on you want to get this, it's a house, it's a piece of land, whatever it is, you can't get it unless you have your right papers. Certificate of baptism, certificate of marriage should be from a canonical church. You should be baptized in the canonical church, married in the canonical church. And now most of them, even the you know, the people that they are in the opposite, and they say that we don't recognize archdiocese and this and that, you see sometimes when the time comes to marry their children or to baptize their children, they come to the canonical church. They don't go to these other churches. Right.
Just on that point, is that a nuance of being married in Greece or an expectation that the Greek government has that you actually undertake a religious wedding as opposed to here in Australia where when one gets married there is both the religious component and the secular component, and I would imagine here in Australia they would recognise the wedding irrespective of whether it was canonical or otherwise.
Greece recently, as you know, they introduced the civil marriage, and not many marry under the civic law. All of them, most of them, they do go, 99%, they go to the church. Only the marriages that they can be performed in the church, they perform this civic marriage. For example, some that they married, Christians, Muslims, that can't be performed in the Orthodox Church, unless the Muslim becomes Orthodox, but it's very difficult, as you know. And so they just go to the civil office and perform their marriage, the civil marriage. And they allow this only to resolve the problem and the situation of the children. Otherwise, all of them, they do perform the ecclesiastical marriage. Now, well, concerning us, in this country and the other countries where we do have civil marriage also, and it's compulsory. Here, the civil marriage is compulsory for everybody. And it's the marriage which is recognized by the country, by the law, not the ecclesiastical marriage. So, we do perform. We, all the priests, we are also registrars. And we perform with the ecclesiastical marriage, also the civic marriage. We fill up the applications and the couple signs the papers when the sacrament finishes and they get both certificates, the civic and the religious. Now, you're going to Greece. If you are Greek Orthodox, both of you, and you married into the church, the authorities in Greece will ask you for the religious certificate. And this is what recognizes and accepts. If there is any other way that there is a civic marriage and with a proper reason, then probably they say, all right, we have to resolve the problem for the children of this couple and accepting the civil marriage. In case, as I mentioned to you, probably a non-Christian marriages a Christian or a Buddhist or so. For this reason, most of the times we are asking in such cases, these persons shall become Christians or Orthodox. And we have the catechisms and we try to do our best so that you are not going to have any problem later on with such cases as happen many, many times and worried a lot of the people. I mentioned this particular marriage in Adelaide, and really I was very sorry to hear that, and I said to the lady, what I'm going to do, I'm going to dig the grave and get out the bones and marry you with the bones just to resolve the problem. Impossible. So you had to be very careful in the beginning when you the time of your wedding came to ask, to see, and something that you should always remember if you go to any church, to see if it's canonical or not. If you visit another state that you don't know there the canonical and non-canonical churches, and it happened to go to one of the churches, you will recognize that it's a canonical church if the name of the archbishop was commemorated. In all canonical churches, we commemorate the name of the archbishop. And if the bishop performs, of course, also the name of the bishop. The bishop commemorates the name of the archbishop and the priest the name of the bishop, the local bishop. Εάν ακούσετε κάποιο άλλο όνομα, something doesn't go well. Something is wrong. Και από εκεί θα καταλάβετε ότι δεν είναι κανονική η Εκκλησία. It's not a canonical church.
And also you'll see the double-headed eagle. This is the symbol of the archdiocese as well. Let's just make one point very clear. Here in Melbourne, these community churches that we speak of, most of them are canonical. They have a priest who has been provided to by the archdiocese. We have a handful that are schismatic, non-canonical. Okay. In Adelaide, it's a different. In Adelaide, different story again. They have a non-canonical bishop. They have numerous non-canonical churches, and in Sydney, the same up there. Anything else? Any other questions? Yes.
Thank you. One thing that people can do before they go to the church is buy the Archdiocese calendar, which mentions all the churches that are part of the Archdiocese. And it's a good indication as to which church they can go to if there's confusion. And also, you know, if the church that were baptized at that given point of time was also part of the Archdiocese.
Yeah, that's a very good point. We still have to sometimes be careful because, for example, in the case of Hobart, if you open up the calendar...
That's an exception last few
that's
months.
Right, yeah.
I wanted to ask Theophilus that Zodokho be here in early 1960s, before I was born. Was that?
It was a canonical church.
Ήταν. Ήτανε. Γιατί κάποιος μου είπε που δεν ήταν κανονική.
Ναι, δεν είναι κανονική ήταν. Κανονική όπως και αυτή η Ζωοδόχος πηγή ήταν που σε ποιο μέρος.
Εδώ σε
κοντά ήταν. Ναι. Είναι κανονική, όπως και η Αγία Ειρήνη που ήταν επίσης πέρα προς το Κάλτον.
Μην είσαι καλά, ναι, γιατί ο αδερφός μου βαφτίστηκε εκεί και ένας ιερέας της Αρχιεπισκοπής είπε όχι, δεν είναι κανονική και πρέπει να γίνει κανονική.
Ήταν κανονική, παιδιά, ήταν κανονική. Το σχίσμα στη Μελβούρνη ήταν από το 62 μέχρι το 69.
Αυτό ήταν την κεντρική κοινότητα.
Κεντρική κοινότητα.
Η Ζωοδόχο πηγή τότε
ήταν... Ήταν της κοινότητος. Για αυτή την περίοδο ήταν όλες οι εκκλησίες της κοινότητας σχισματικές.
Από το 62 μέχρι 69.
Ναι. Μετά ήρθαν πάλι στην Αρχιεπισκοπή. They came back to us and we accepted them. And so έχουμε κανονίσει τα μυστήρια. Το Πατριαρχείο κανόνισε να γίνεται μια μικρή τελετή για τη βάπτιση και για το γάμο για να γίνονται τα μυστήρια κανονικά.
Αναμέσα, άμα βαφτίστηκε κάποιος αναμέσα το
62. Ναι, αυτή την περίοδο, άμα βαφτίστηκε κανείς ή παντρεύτηκε από το 62 μέχρι το 69, πρέπει το μυστήριο να το κανονίσουμε, να το κάνουμε. Όχι όλο το μυστήριο, αλλά υπάρχει ειδική τελετή που κάνουμε για αυτά τα μυστήρια μόνο. Μόνο για αυτά τα μυστήρια, για αυτό το χρόνο. Αυτό τον καιρό. Από τότε και μέχρι τώρα δεν υπάρχει. Η παλιά κοινότητα εδώ είναι κανονική. Οι ιερείς είναι κανονικοί και τα λοιπά. Δεν έχουμε. Αλλά δεν είναι μόνο η παλιά. Έχουμε και άλλες κοινότητες που είναι κανονικές κοινότητες. Δεν έχουμε πρόβλημα. Πέρασε η ώρα, παιδιά, πιστεύω. Κοντεύει 9 πέρασε 9-5. 9 και... Αν δεν έχει άλλη ερώτηση. Ναι. Τελειώσαμε. Ο πατήρ δε...
And just to finish off, if you are in discussion, you are in discussion with someone about this topic, do not be afraid to tell them straight what the situation is, and if they are married or baptized in one of these non-canonical churches, tell them, ξεκάθαρα, you are not married, you are not baptized, to give them the opportunity to rectify the mistake. For their own salvation. For their salvation.
Θα ήθελα να ευχαριστήσω πολύ τον Θόδωρο που μίλησε για αυτό το θέμα που είναι πάρα πολύ επίκαιρο. Είναι κάθε μέρα της ζωής μας εδώ το ακούμε και το αντιμετωπίζουμε. Γι' αυτό ήταν πάρα πολύ καλή η σκέψη να μιλήσει για το θέμα αυτό και θα ήθελα αυτά που ακούσατε, αυτά που ξέρετε, να μην τα κρατήσετε μόνο για τον εαυτό σας, να τα λέτε και στα άλλα παιδιά, γιατί καμιά φορά πηγαίνουν άνθρωποι οι οποίοι δεν ξέρουν και κάνουν λάθος και ύστερα έχουν όλες αυτές τις στεναχώριες και τα προβλήματα που έχουν με αυτό το θέμα. Και έτσι λοιπόν τον ευχαριστώ πάρα πολύ και εύχομαι πάλι όταν του δοθεί η ευκαιρία και όταν τον χρειαστούμε θα του ζητήσουμε και πάλι την βοήθειά του. Διευχών των Αγίων Πατέρων ημών, Κύριε Ιησού Χριστέ ο Θεός, ελέησον και σώσον ημάς. Καληνύχτα, παιδιά.